Welcome to Nancy's Bookshelf, a weekly program of conversations with writers in the studios of North State Public Radio. Now here's your host, Nancy Wiegman.
My guest today is a certified massage therapist who taught deep tissue massage classes in Chico for 14 years. She was trained in structural integration by teachers who studied with Dr. Ida Rolf and maintains a private Rolfing practice in Chico. She has now written a book that offers an energy medicine approach to body work as a guide for releasing chronic pain, improving mental function, and freeing energy flow. The title of her book is Structural Integration and Energy Medicine, a Handbook of Advanced Body Work. Jean Louise Green, welcome.
Thank you, Nancy.
Now, you have been a Rolfer for a very long time, and you started out as a regular massage therapist. And how did you happen to get into Rolfing?
That is a great question. Thank you. I was a gymnast in my early years. And as a gymnast, I had some injuries. I also had developed some chronic patterns in my body because of incorrect training. I later became a coach of gymnastics. And in the desire to become a phenomenal coach, I realized that I needed more training in anatomy, kinesiology. And I had the good fortune of meeting a person who actually had a school of massage in Keauʻ, Hawaii. And he suggested that I attend his one-year training. He said that the first half of it would be a strong focus on anatomy. And also, I would be able to become licensed in massage there. So I love that idea. And I had already taken some shiatsu, which is self-massage, and I realized the benefit of it. So I thought, well, yeah, let's add this to my toolbox. So I did take the training, and I realized I had a gift with my hands. And I also got to experience my first 10-session series of structural integration with Rolf practitioner David Segala. And I will always be grateful for that. In the second session, I looked at David and I said, I am going to do this work someday.
And so you knew pretty much from the beginning that this was going to be your life path.
I don't know that I knew it was going to be my life path. I knew it was the next step. Yes. Yes.
Well, I have been a yoga teacher for many years, and my very first yoga teacher said, you should be a yoga teacher. And the time I thought, I'm not flexible. Yoga teachers are flexible people. So, but you recognized that this was something so valuable that you wanted to share that.
Yeah, it really did call to my heart, and I realized that this was the next piece for me. And then when I did my training, I was so appreciative to be able to experience a balancing of my pelvis. Many gymnasts, you'll notice, have a sway back, a lordosis, as it's called in the medical community. I developed that as a result of my training. So standing, sitting, walking, kneeling was not comfortable for me.
Because of that tilt of your pelvis, it was
correct.
Out of alignment.
Yeah, and also it affects the psyche and the emotions because there's no letting down to be supported by the gravitational field. There's always a kind of pulling up in a way so that I could actually stand upright. Because with that type of pelvis where it's tilted forward, there's kind of a falling forward of the body. And the head will fall forward as well. So during my structural integration training, that core level problem actually became balanced. And for the very first time in many years, I experienced the support of the earth beneath me. And I felt my body weight dropping down through my feet. And a sense of ease just permeated my body. It was a moment I'll always remember.
My guest is Jean Louise Green. She is a certified massage therapist, a certified rolfer, and a former gymnast. And she has been telling us how she happened to get into rolfing. Now, it's one thing to be a practitioner and to even teach other therapists, but it's another to write a book. That's quite an undertaking, Jean Louise.
And
I happen to have been familiar with your work in past years, for quite a few years, but I was surprised that you came out with a book. Here's a whole side of you that I didn't know you had.
Thank you so much, Nancy. I think what got me into writing the book was realizing that Dr. Rolfe was speaking about something far more sophisticated than what I think most of us realize in terms of body structure. She actually said that the body has a relationship to the gravitational field and that the field of the earth could support the body and be a beneficial force. Well, I wondered what the heck she meant by that. I was thinking about that for years. And in the process of growing up as I did and also having a spiritual path as well, I have experienced some significant energy flows through my body. Eventually, I realized that the beneficial aspect of gravity that Dr. Rolfe was referring to was the movement of life force energies through the body. And those life force energies derive from they're part of the electromagnetic field that derives from the gravitational force. So that I got to meet Dr. Oshman as well, Dr. James Oshman.
Well, when you were writing this book, I'm assuming, I mean, most people have help when they write a book, because that's quite an undertaking. And I think you even refer to them as your team, a team that helped you write this book.
Yes.
So what resources did you draw on as far as human resources?
Thank you so much. That's huge. First of all, Dr. Rolfe was my major inspiration, my teachers of structural integration, my partner Benjamin, who supported this whole project for many years, Dr. Oshman was huge for me because he helped me connect the dots of how that life force energy moves through the body.
Well, how long did it take you to write this book?
I figured I started it in 2012, and by 2016, Oshman had actually requested the manuscript. He had looked at some of my prior writings, and I had sent a letter of request to him to utilize some of his material. So after looking at my website and seeing the writings I had done, he thought, well, yeah, let's check this out. We had some wonderful connection.
Well, now you're talking about him. He has a PhD, and he wrote the foreword to your book.
Correct.
And that, I must have assumed you were honored by that, that he was willing to write the foreword to your book.
Who was he? Pardon?
Who is James
Dr.
Oshman?
James Oshman. Dr. James Oshman is one of my heroes. I actually wrote that to him in my first letter. I got to meet him in 2006 several times. He's a biophysicist. And Dr. Oshman was asked by Dr. Rolfe in the late 1970s to actually explain why her work was effective. And in the late 1970s, Dr. Oshman also got to experience a 10-session series with Peter Melchior. And that was the time when he met Dr. Rolfe. So Dr. Rolfe, even prior to that, was mentored in 1972 by Albert Szent-Györgyi. He was Czechoslovakian scientist. And he actually studied the proteins of connective tissue and realized that when the proteins of connective tissue are hydrated, they become conductors, semiconductors of life force energy.
Well, your foreword by Dr. Oshman begins, "The concepts presented in this book can benefit anyone and can also enhance the work of all healthcare practitioners. The reason for such a bold claim is simple. All healing methodologies and practices affect anatomical balance, whether or not one realizes it or not. And he says all systems of the body are interconnected. Bringing balance to any one of these systems, any one system affects all the others. Hence, practitioners of structural integration, that is Rolfing, don't have to address pathologies. They don't have to say, oh, your shoulder, you got a torn rotator cuff. That's not what Rolfing is about. And he says, these Rolfing practitioners align the body vertically and problems begin to take care of themselves. This is a powerful and effective concept. It works. And then he refers to your book. He says, this book means a lot to me personally because structural integration, Rolfing that is, dramatically changed my life. It gave me a new, unique, fun profession, along with mental clarity, physical energy, and great health. After experiencing these results myself, I became fascinated with Dr. Ida Rolf's revolutionary concepts about reorganizing people's bodies along a vertical line. When I met her in the late 70s, she challenged me to develop a scientific explanation of her work so that anyone could understand it. I accepted this task and never regretted it. So that is from the foreword of Structural Integration in Energy Medicine, a Handbook of Advanced Bodywork. And this is written by Jean Louise Green, who is a Rolf practitioner in Chico and a certified massage therapist. So you said you also personally benefited. These are not just abstract concepts for you, Jean Louise.
No, they aren't. Many people are amazed by the amount of work I do and the type of work I do. And I tell people that is possible because I utilize my line. My line is my direct connection with life force energies from the terrestrial earth and the celestial heavens. I've learned that the heavens and the earth are the two main sources of energy on this planet. And our bodies are designed to be conduits of them. And the work that we do in structural integration organizes the eight major segments of the body so that the center of gravity of these major segments are balanced around a central vertical axis.
Okay, now you just used the word axis because mm-hmm. that's what most people, the term that most people use for this vertical line.
Yes.
Which she calls line.
Yes.
But most people, I think, would understand it better if you say, oh, axis. I understand axis.
It's kind of like a plumb bob if you were to drop it from the top of the head. It extends into the earth, and it also extends up into the heavens.
I'm Nancy Wigman, and you're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. We're going to take a short break, and then I'll be back with my guest, Rolfer Jean Louise Green, who has written a book on structural integration in energy medicine. I'm Nancy Wigman, and you're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. My guest today is massage therapist Jean Louise Green, who has written a book on energy medicine and structural integration. I should think that your kind of work is all the more important in this day of computers and cars and driving, where we distort this line.
Yes, exactly. And many of us have had injuries, car accidents, illnesses. All of these things affect the connective tissue. And the connective tissue is what we Rolf practitioners work with. And it's through the connective tissues that this life force energy moves. The life force energy can also be referred to as chi. And acupuncturists, you know that very well. So this has been studied by the Taoists, ancient Chinese researchers of life force energy, for many years. Dr. Rolf was aware of that.
Well, you mentioned that Dr. Oshman, who wrote the foreword of your book, was very enthusiastic about this system because it personally helped him. And he refers to this line that you're talking about. And how does the average person get any kind of notion of this vertical line?
Right. In structural integration, we actually work with the connective tissues of the body, the fascia. So we use our fingers, knuckles, forearms to work, to do manipulative work within the connective tissue. And it's based around a series of 10 sessions, with each session having a particular goal and a particular area of the body to be addressed. So within that sequence of work, the outer wrap or superficial fascia of the body is addressed in the first 3 sessions, and then the next 4 sessions address the core level areas of the body. Those are sessions 4 through 7, and that's usually where what I call core level rotation patterns have gotten stuck in the body. These are from perhaps lifting, twisting, injuries. Many, many different types of stressors can create twists in the body. So as a person goes through this work, these areas get cleared, and along with the clearing of the physical body comes a clearing of their mental and emotional being as well, because it's all interconnected. We are body, mind, emotion, and spirit.
My guest is Jean Louise Green, who is a certified Rolf practitioner, and she has written a book, Structural Integration and Energy Medicine. She has written this as a handbook, and by handbook, you encourage both the lay people,
yes,
who are perhaps going in or considering going in for Rolfing sessions, these 10 sessions, but also for the practitioner. Now, you just mentioned rotation patterns.
Yes.
And that we can kind of think, okay, a line, I can understand the axis, the body has an axis, but rotation patterns, Jean Louise, what the heck do you mean by
right,
that?
Right, thank you. Well, when another way to explain that would be adhesions. And adhesions are places in the body where the connective tissue has gotten stuck. And usually with these adhesions, there's some twisting that's going on. And the twisting can happen at a micro level, at the level of fibers. The twisting can happen at the macro level, where it's involving whole body segments or girdles, the upper girdle, the shoulder girdle, or the pelvic girdle.
Well, I suspect that a person would not have any feeling for rotation patterns in the body, but they might notice, my right foot turns out more than my left foot does.
That's correct. Or maybe their strain in their neck is always on one side. Or perhaps they love to sleep on the same side of their body, or they end up on the same side. Yeah. These are indications of a twist that has probably gotten stuck in the body. And as the work progresses, this comes out. It can resolve with some really good work.
Well, sometimes I notice when people, say in a yoga class, are lying down at the end, relaxing, and somebody will have, it's more often, it's not that rare, the head would be tilted, the ear toward one shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
And when I mention it to them and they say, well, yeah, it's typically it's like that, or they may be aware of it, or they may not be aware.
Sure.
Or they say, well, I recently heard this. So I'm assuming that when somebody walks in the door of your massage room, that that's the first thing you do is take a look at their body.
I'm watching them walk in. Uh-huh. I'm watching them walk in. And one of the first things we do is I actually take a look of them standing in front of me. And we'll look at the front view, side view, back view, other side view. That will give me a lot of information about what's going on in their body. And I'll often explain what I'm seeing. And then as we start the first session, quite often that information that I saw from the visual will be confirmed with what my hands are picking up.
My guest is Jean Louise Green, and she has written a handbook of advanced body work. And she has written it both for practitioners of Rolfing or massage therapy, but also for the person going in for this. And I happen to have gone through the series with you quite a few years ago, and I wish I'd had your book at the time. I thought, wow, I could have gotten so much more out of this experience if I had just had your handbook.
Thank you. And Nancy, the reason I wrote this is for my clients. As I've gotten to understand more of the depths of this work, I realized I need to communicate this with people. And during a session, I have only so much time. And I really do need to focus on the structural work I'm doing with the person. I mean, sometimes I'll get involved in sharing information. And I really wanted to get this information out in detail so that someone would be able to access that as they go through the 10 series.
Well, I had a Rolfer who was exploring a muscle in the back of my neck, and she says, oh, your left nostril is blocked. And I thought, oh, my gosh, because it wasn't like when you have a cold and it's blocked. I thought, now, those are some wise fingers, experienced fingers, that she can feel a muscle in the back of my neck and know what's going on in my left nostril.
That is remarkable.
So I would imagine that people are often surprised at the information you give them about their own body that they were not aware of.
Yes, and people are really grateful. And really, everyone wants to optimize. We really do. We have an opportunity to grow and enjoy this planet. And if we have bodies that are optimal, it's going to make it so much easier and enjoyable. Why not?
Well, you say that people have we have rotation patterns in the body. And how does what you do, this structural integration, how does it release the rotations in the extremities and in the core of the person's body?
Just by working with the connective tissues. Yep. Going session by session. It's detail work. And it has a synergy effect. As we clear the body is ready for the next session. Dr. Rolf developed a recipe, and she did this over a period of time. And the recipe is very well designed to follow the unwinding of the body.
Well, you have several times mentioned the connective tissue, and that's at the core of what you do, the heart of what you do. But do people understand what connective tissue even is?
Thank you, Nancy. That's great. Connective tissue is the fascia of the body. It's what gives the body its shape and its form. It holds everything together. If you were to cut an orange open and you see the segments of the orange, the white part that's creating all those segments, that would be like the connective tissues of the body. Yeah? Or meat, when you cut meat and you see the grayish white compartments, that would be similar to the connective tissues of our body.
What other labels? Because if I look at an anatomy book, I can see muscles, I can see bones, but what am I looking at when I'm looking at connective tissue?
Myofascia, myo means muscle, fascia means connective tissue. Connective tissue is comprised of bone, cartilage, tendons, ligaments, adipose, even blood, and also muscle is layered by deep connective tissue. And it's that deep connective tissue that eventually becomes the tendons.
Well, There's another name in, Dr. Rolfe's name, obviously, she's the one that started this, but there's another well-known name, and this is called and this is called Hellerwerk. And what role, first of all, where does it get its name?
Oh, I'm so glad you brought up Hellerwerk. Right off the top, I would like to thank, with great appreciation, Robert Carl Scherzinger and the Hellerwerk Board of Directors that allowed me to utilize Hellerwerk material for part two, the sessions chapters in my book. Joseph Heller was a student, a very respected student of Dr. Rolfe, and he was the first president of the Rolfe Institute. Heller brought forward the mental and emotional themes, the psycho-emotional themes that are also connected with the work of structural integration. So he was addressing the mental, the emotional, and I would say the spiritual aspects of the work. And I was first introduced to Hellerwerk ideas during the practicing phase of my training. And it made so much sense to me. And I enjoyed being able to share some of that information with my clients, and they really got a lot out of it. So when it came time to write about each of these sessions, I really wanted to include the Hellerwerk information. And the Hellerwerk board really worked with me very graciously to allow me to do it. So many thanks to them.
Well, we haven't really talked about the background of Dr. Ida Rolfe. And you give this in your book, and I was familiar with the name for years, but I didn't really realize what her background was. And what was her expertise?
Dr. Rolfe was a biochemist. She was an incredibly intelligent woman with many different interests. And she was born in 1896. And she was born into a prosperous family of a contractor in the Bronx of New York.
See, now that surprised me. I always imagined she was born in Germany or someplace like that. But she was born here in the United States.
Yeah, and she was of German descent. And her father really encouraged her intelligence and her higher education. And during the time of World War I, she got an opportunity to actually graduate from Barnard College. And then she obtained a job with the Rockefeller Institute. And she worked for 12 years in the chemotherapy and organic chemistry departments. While she was working for the Rockefeller Institute, she also got to continue her education, and she earned her PhD in biochemistry from Columbia University. The Rockefeller Institute also allowed her to study mathematics and atomic physics in Zurich, homeopathy in Geneva, and that's when she began studying yoga as well in New York City for a 10-year period. So she was a very broad spectrum woman, just incredible.
So certainly a respected scholar.
Definitely.
And she was kind of ahead of her time in
very
a lot
much
of ways.
So.
Now, you mentioned that the different things that she studied served as a background. She would understand energy.
Yes,
and I think, you know, as I was reading your book, I thought, gosh, I think this is something lacking in our school curriculum, that we don't introduce this idea to children at a young age. I think it would be very easy for them to understand this invisible force that adults neglect because we can't see it, touch it, but we can get a sense of it. And I think when somebody undergoes your sessions of Rolfing, I think that opens them up to having a sense of, oh, this is some kind of energy running through my body that has been freed up.
Exactly. You know, I was just having that conversation with a client yesterday, and I kind of likened the physical body. if you were to look at an iceberg, the half that's above it would be the physical body. The part that's below the water, you could liken that to the energetic body or to the subconscious.
Let me pause for just a second, because when you use energetic body, I think people think, oh, energetic, that's somebody who has lots of energy and they run around and they get things done. But you're using energetic as an adjective for this vital life force.
Yes, that's correct. And this energy is actually what animates us. And that energy creates the blueprint for the physical form. That's really important. So to be as clear as possible on the physical body allows this energy to move through. And it also allows a person to be more in touch with the guidance that comes through and the intuitive knowing that comes through when we're more clear and we can actually hear that still small voice, so to speak, that comes from the heart.
Well, people may be thinking, oh, Jean Louise, now you're getting off into this new agey kind of stuff.
Oh,
it has no scientific basis. So what would you say to that?
Well, what I would actually say is that the energetics of the body is very well substantiated now through emerging science based on geophysics, biophysics, electrical engineering, electrophysiology, and medicine that have emerged since Dr. Rolfe's passing in 1979. We are energetic beings in a physical form.
Well, as a yoga teacher, it's hard to get across to people that what you're really, these techniques of yoga are to influence your energy body. And when I taught college students, I would give a final exam at the end of the semester. And the students that understood yoga were the electrical engineering students.
Wow.
They would write beautiful papers because they understood energy. I thought, yeah, they got it.
That's fabulous. Thank you for sharing that.
My guest today is a certified massage therapist, Jean Louise Green, who taught deep tissue massage classes in Chico for 14 years. I'm Nancy Wiegman. You're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. I'm Nancy Wiegman, and you're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. My guest today is massage therapist Jean Louise Green, who has written a book on energy medicine and structural integration. You do not claim to be a nutritionist, but you do devote a chapter to the role of nutrition, and I would like you to share with us what you include in your chapter on nutrition.
Sure. I think one of the main things is I talk about the importance of minerals. Minerals contain electrons. If the body is highly mineralized, our pH is going to be more alkaline. If our pH is more alkaline, we're going to have a healthier body. So in a nutshell, I really emphasize simple foods. I emphasize eating good quality salt, salt which is not the white salt that pours easily, salt like the pink Himalayan or the green Celtic sea salt that you have to pinch, you know?
In fact, there is a museum to salt on the Mediterranean in France. And I went to that museum, and it was amazing, all the things we typically do not know about salt. They produce salt in this region, and I have been eating their salt.
That's great.
Since.
That's great.
Because I think it's something that people don't think about. They think, well, salt is bad, so I'll just use salt sparingly. And the salt that they use is the typical American salt, I guess I'll call it.
Yeah, and that salt is actually not good for the body. When they say salt is bad for the body, it's the white salt that pours easily. That's not good. There's a book called The pH Miracle by Robert Young, and he and his wife had a statement in there that really caught my attention, and that is that the craving for sweet is the need for salt. That jumped out at me like crazy, and having grown up on an American diet, I had a sugar addiction that was pretty nasty. And it took me a while to receive the information about salt because I wasn't eating salt very much. And that can really mess with physiological symptoms of the body. So anyway, I'm grateful I found my way. And a lot of the information I present there is through my own body's experience with the things that I've learned. And then I've attended workshops and trainings and am just passing information on.
I think one thing that would surprise people about the body, you mentioned pH, the body and its pH is that, okay, I want to have a balanced pH, and an orange is acidic, so that's going to make my body acidic, and that's not this intuition, what is intuitive is not true.
That's correct, yeah. Thank you for bringing that up. First of all, salt is one of the most alkalizing substances on the planet. And when we think of lemon, lime, and grapefruit, we think of them being acidifying. And actually, once they're taken into the body, they create an alkalizing effect. And greens are really good for the body. Those are also highly alkalizing.
In fact, you mentioned the foods that have an acidic effect on the body. And when somebody reads that list, I think, my gosh, that's the American diet.
that's what we
eat every day, right. Are these things that are not bad. I wouldn't call them bad, but it's just that it creates an imbalance because we eat so much from these types of foods that are acid-forming.
That's right. And acid-forming diets often lead to disease in the body. I actually test my own body pH probably 3 or 4 times a week, and I pay attention to what that's doing because I don't want to have arthritis. I don't want to be overweight. You know, I really want to optimize.
Well, I'm going to read your list in here. Well, you say the liver and kidneys form the first line of defense against excessive acidity in the body. However, a diet high in acid foods, such as meat, dairy, grains, high sugar fruit, and bread. That list, Jean Louise, meat, dairy, grains, bread, those are all the foods that are pretty typical in the American diet. You say they may exceed the capacity of the liver and kidneys to filter acidic toxins. Those toxins will then back up into the connective tissues, creating inflammation and potential damage to organs and tissues. Now, we don't think about that list of foods as being bad foods. Those foods are not going to damage our body, Jean Louise. But you say the following information describes the mechanisms through which the body protects against, neutralizes, or removes acidic toxins through fat, cholesterol, and minerals. So how does the body cope with excessive acidity?
Right. Well, usually it'll take the toxins and shunt them into the fat. So that's a lot of weight gain for people. Also, the body will pull minerals out of blood, tissue, bones in order to neutralize the acids because the acids have a positive electrical charge. The minerals have a negative electrical charge. And if the body is chronically acidic, there's a lot of movement of those minerals going back and forth across joints. And sometimes there's poor reabsorption because eventually once those minerals are utilized to neutralize these toxins, they will, from my understanding, they'll be moved back into the blood or the bones or the tissue. And sometimes they get stuck in the joints. And these excessive minerals that get stuck in the joints are part of what create arthritis.
Well, I don't know if it's a good thing, but if people hear what you have to say and they think, well, I don't know if I believe that, I would suggest that they try making some of these little changes, like you just said, just thinking in terms of balance, the acidic-forming foods, maybe eat fewer of those and eat more of the alkaline-producing foods like green leafy vegetables, for example, and just notice if they feel better.
Exactly.
They don't have to take your word for it, Jean Louise.
Exactly.
They can experiment on their own bodies.
Exactly. Once I started eating salt, the good quality salt, it was just within a couple of weeks I was noticing that my joints were feeling really good and everything was moving so easily. And it was interesting because I realized the only thing different that I've been doing was eating this good quality salt. Bernard Jensen, who wasn't, I guess he was a naturopath, he said that salt is the anti-stiffness mineral. And I just love that. And I had that experience in my body. Yeah.
My guest is massage therapist Jean Louise Green. She is a certified Rolf practitioner, and she has written a handbook of advanced body work called Structural Integration and Energy Medicine. So the structural integration we also know as Rolfing, but energy medicine, that is kind of this vague idea that we're not quite sure what does she mean by that. But what you're just talking about with the food we eat is an example of the food that we eat because we think, well, we need the energy, so we're going to eat this food. Of how that affects the energy body.
Right. It's all part of it. It's all interconnected. Yes.
Well, when you present this information, you, for example, say we really need minerals, and you suggest, for example, that we drink alkaline water.
Yes.
As a way of helping maintain the body's pH. You say the health of our connective tissue is affected by the level of our hydration. Alkaline water with a pH between 9 and 11 not only hydrates the connective tissues, but also gently neutralizes and removes acid waste from the body. And you say these people you quote, describe the importance of alkaline water. For optimum health, your water must be energized, saturated with electrons. Water like that is highly charged and full of potential energy. It is also alkaline. In fact, water is alkaline because of the negative charge from all its electrons. Acids are dominated by positively charged protons. It is the attraction of electrons to protons that allows the alkaline substances to neutralize acidic substances.
That's great.
And this, yeah, you wrote
Who
this.
Who wrote that?
Who wrote this important, this wise information?
Yeah. And I really do credit the pH miracle, Robert Young, for that great information. Thank you.
And water is not something we give too much thought to. In recent years, we think, well, I'll drink bottled water. That's better. And you say not necessarily.
Not necessarily. From what Robert Young stated in his book, most bottled water is acidic, which is really surprising to me. I think it's very important nowadays for everyone to have a really good water filter. It's just so important, especially here in California, with our agriculture and also with the challenges that we've been experiencing here in the North State with the fires. And so important to have good quality water. The water is what carries these electrical charges through the body. And without proper hydration, we're not going to get the energy that we need in the body. So hydration is...
So it's not just a matter, when you say hydrate, it's not just a matter of turning on the tap, filling a glass of water, and pouring this into our body.
It's what kind of water we're putting into our bodies. I met Dr. Robert Schleip in 2006, at a fascial fascinations workshop. He stated that the type of water that we drink is really important. And I asked him what type he drank, And he said, I use the Nikon Aquapur. And I just went, yes, that's the one that I have. So we have several alkaline water filters. And I love the Nikon Aquapur because it's a countertop model. And if for some reason water is not able to come through the sink, as long as we had a water source, we could pour it into the top and it would be really well filtered. And then we also have an Alcaviva water filter, which is an alkaline water filter that's connected to the tap at the sink. And it filters the water really well also.
Well, I have noticed I can tell a big difference in different bottled waters when I taste them. In the past, I didn't think much about it, but now I can tell a big difference in bottled waters. And
Is there a certain one that you prefer, Nancy?
Well, I'd rather not mention labels because some of them, and it's hard to describe the taste, but,
You do notice a difference.
Yes,
yeah.
I'll just leave that, but I do notice a difference. And you also mentioned raw versus cooked because that comes up a lot of times. We even, a few years ago, had a restaurant that served just raw food. It had delicious food.
Oh, I love that restaurant.
But so what do you recommend as far as raw versus cooking food?
Well, in my book, I refer back to Robert Young, and I believe that they were stating, you know, Nancy, I'd have to look at that exactly, but I think at least 50% of the food being raw, and a large part of that, 80% of that being alkaline and 20% being acidic.
Yeah, that's what you say, 50%.
Yeah.
I don't want to give the impression that yours is all about food and nutrition, but it is about energy and the energy of the food and the water. So your chapter on nutrition fits in with this whole pattern of energy medicine.
Right. The reason why I wrote that chapter, or that part three, as it's called, is because I wanted to give people some tools that would help them minimize putting stress back into their body. When stress becomes internalized in the body, it's known as strain. So many people that I work with, they come in, and many of them, immediately I can realize, I can sense that they're not getting enough minerals in their body. So that last part, and also...
Yeah, I might mention that part three, you call it support tools.
Right. And then also, sometimes people come in highly stressed from mental and emotional things that have happened that have created difficulties for them. So I wanted to create a section that people could go back to that has information on meditation, on nutrition, on how to tend to the emotional body, on the five Tibetan rites, on gratitude practices.
That's one of the things that we have not even touched on, the five Tibetan rites that a lot of people, I think, are familiar with. There is so much in your book that we did not get a chance to touch on. So let me ask you then, what do you most want people to know about your book?
I love this book. this book is a great accompaniment to the 10 series. And as Dr. Oshman stated in the very beginning of his foreword, he said that this book could benefit anyone. And I think we're all in physical bodies and we want to optimize. And body structure is right up at the top of the list. And I think followed by that might be nutrition and then also one's ability to conduct electromagnetic energy through their body.
Well, one of my favorite quotes is by Nikola Tesla, and he says, if you want to find the secrets of the universe, think in terms of energy, frequency, and vibration.
Yes.
So thank you, Jean Louise Green, for shedding light on energy and vibration in your line of work. Thank you
so much, Nancy. This has really been an honor and a pleasure. Thank you.
My guest has been certified Rolf practitioner Jean Louise Green, who has written the book Structural Integration and Energy Medicine, a Handbook of Advanced Bodywork. And now a word from Richard Parker.
My driver's license is going to expire next month, so I have to go in and apply for a new one in a day or so. which means I have to pass a written exam and prove to the DMV that I can see well enough to drive. I'm not worried about the eye test. I had LASIK surgery last fall, and I see better than I have in years. But the written test is a bother. Now, I've taken 1,000 exams in my time, through school, college, graduate school. Plus, I've taken the licensing test in 3 or 4 states. I'm a pretty good test taker, actually, if you ask anybody except Mrs. Bryan, my 10th grade algebra teacher. She would have a different perspective on my academic aptitude, indeed about my ability to learn anything at all. But that's another story. I remember the first time I took a driver's license exam. I recall memorizing the number of feet it took to stop at various speeds. Of course, nobody should be allowed to drive a car unless they know exactly that at 35 miles an hour it takes 210 feet to come to a complete stop. Right. As if many of us, or any of us, could look through the windshield and point to a spot exactly 210 feet ahead. Speaking of stopping, the first car I was allowed to drive was a Nash Metropolitan. Now, if you don't know what a Nash Metropolitan looks like, notice what Mickey is driving the next time you see a Mickey Mouse cartoon. That's what a Nash Metropolitan looks like. Mine had an annoying habit. As you're going along, something would cause the brake fluid to heat up, and as it expanded, the brakes came on all by themselves. You'd be going along just fine, and then suddenly, you weren't. The brakes would lock up, and there you'd sit until things cooled down, or you got out under the hood and bled some fluid out of the system. Aside from being dangerous, it can be embarrassing to come to a stop in the middle of the street and have to sit there in your Mickey Mouse car while the brakes cooled. Well, this time around at the DMV, I won't need to get the motorcycle endorsement. I've ridden motorcycles for about 40 years, including an 8,000-mile cross-country round trip on a Yamaha 650. I was in my early 30s at the time, and young enough, flexible enough, and dumb enough to do it. Really, I would not take $1 million for the experience. But then, I wouldn't do it again for $1 million. I put a lot of miles on a couple of those 650s. Then, I bought a Harley. My brother, who is the real motorcyclist in the family, told me that every rider should have a Harley experience once, and that I had better get to it sooner than later. So I bought one. But now it's time to sell it. It's been a wonderful thing for the last 9 years, but it weighs exactly 5 times more than I do. And it's getting to the point that if it topples over, I have to have help picking it up. That can be embarrassing too. Almost as bad as getting stuck in the middle of the road in a Mickey Mouse car. This is Richard Parker.
You've been listening to Nancy's Bookshelf, a production of North State Public Radio. You can find this and other episodes of Nancy's Bookshelf on our website, mynspr.org.